Sir Andrew, I will start with you because I believe that happy returns are in order.
Yes,
it's a big week for you turning 75.
Yeah, I think so.
And with the TSOs, it seems like this you're in the midst of musical celebrations with the orchestra.
Well, that's for me very exciting because, you know, I first conducted the orchestra almost 45 years ago, and it's been continuous since. And they are such an important part of my life. And, you know, my trips to Toronto are absolutely I look forward to with great enthusiasm and excitement every year. And, of course, to be in this temporary position of interim artistic director and that spending more time with the orchestra has been great. I'm excited about every piece on the program. In no particular order, I'm very excited we're doing Dvorak's Sixth Symphony, which is, I think, just as great as the last three, which are the ones which are much better known. And then the Brahms Double Concerto, one of his most extraordinary and moving pieces. I mean, I think the melody of the second movement of that piece is one of the greatest tunes he ever wrote. It's one of those earworm things. You can't get it out of your head. With Jonathan Crowe and Joe Johnson, the concertmaster and principal cello. I can't wait for that. And then we start the program with what we call a side-by-side event with the youth orchestra. So there'll be far too many people on the stage playing the Carnival Overture by Oscar Morovitz, whom I knew quite well, I have to say, and did quite a few of his pieces. I remember doing a marvellous song cycle that he wrote for Maureen Forrester. This is taking us back a long way. But it's going to be a very nice and joyful event.
Now, I'm also here with the TSO's new CEO, Matthew Loden. This is our first time speaking, so yes. Thank you so much for taking time out to speak with us. Very exciting, brand new season ahead. If there is an overarching philosophy to the programming for the 2019-2020 season, what would you say it is?
I would say it's a few things. As succinctly as possible, the idea of past, present, and future is really certainly folding into the way we've crafted the season because we have the supreme joy of having Sir Andrew on the podium as the current interim artistic director, but we also have Peter Ungen returning as the emeritus conductor. We also have Gustavo Jimeno is going to be here twice over the course of next season as our incoming music director, and Jukka-Pekka, who has been our past music director, will also be on the podium. So I think it's pretty rare to be able to have an opportunity to have those kinds of incredibly important artistic leadership show up on the podium in a single season. We've also crafted it so that if you know nothing about classical music or the symphonic world, there are points of entry throughout the entire season that we think are going to be really compelling for people. You can go from Jonathan Crowe, our concertmaster, playing the Vivaldi Four Seasons, which is for many people very familiar, popular, wonderful music to first become engaged with, all the way to Pictures at an Exhibition, which is another incredibly evocative storytelling type of repertoire. And we have a lot of new works. Of course, Thais is going to be a remarkable event. But we also have, starting off the season, Barbara Hannigan and John Storgaard's doing this really interesting sort of switching off as both performers and conductors. And so there's going to be a little bit for everybody.
You mentioned the past, present, future, and it does seem to frame the TSO as being at a bit of a fork in the road, in a way. Would you say that that's the case?
I would. One of the things that I'm so proud of from an organizational standpoint is that with Sir Andrew's leadership, we've been able to kind of turn the fork in the road into a real opportunity, right? There are very few situations where you can have this kind of artistic transition from Peter to Sir Andrew. Andrew to Gustavo, all happening over the course of three quick seasons, and have it really feel seamless. Everybody has been collaborating on what the programs are, what the vision for the future is going to be, and it's just been delightful. We're all kind of like kids in a candy store.
Well, speaking of which, Sir Andrew, you're coming, I think, for six weeks
yes.
Next season. What are you most looking forward to?
Well, Matthew's already mentioned Thais, the concert performance of Massenet's opera Thais, with Erin Wall, who, of course, is one of the great soprano stars of this country, with whom I've done the piece in concert, incredibly successful both in Melbourne and in the Edinburgh Festival. It's a piece that works very well in concert. It's highly dramatic, has great chorus writing, and of course, as the centerpiece of the work is the famous meditation, which is a great piece. And actually, one of the nice things, if you do it within the context of the opera, is that during the meditation, which there is the participation of the chorus, who actually sing hummed chords in the background, which you don't usually hear in concert performances of the piece. But that's a minor detail. But no, I'm very excited about that. Of course, we initiate the Beethoven celebrations. We start in January 2020, and that will, of course, go through not only this season, but then the next season, which will be, of course, planned by Gustavo. And So I'm also very much looking forward to doing the Mozart Requiem with some singers that actually I shall be auditioning to do very shortly with Barbara Hannigan, because she has this marvellous idea of... she's done this already in Europe and very successfully performed the Rake's Progress of Stravinsky in Gothenburg with young singers that she'd auditioned. And the idea, these are not young singers who are just coming out of university or, you know, they're people who are already into their careers. It's a stage in a career when, you know, anything you can do is to get yourself before the public, is, and to perform a great piece like the Mozart Requiem with the Toronto Symphony is a very exciting and terrific idea on her part. And she, of course, such an extraordinary woman, great singer and a wonderful conductor.
2020 marks a big, big anniversary. We already mentioned Beethoven, the 250th anniversary of his birth. Now, you, Sir Andrew, have been quoted as saying, works by the great composers are not from the past. They are not even of the present. They are always ahead of us, telling us where music will go. Can you expand on that as far as Beethoven goes?
Well, you know, Beethoven was always ahead of his time. And I think the point of that, what I was trying to say, is that somebody once said to Toscanini, how many times have you conducted the Eroica? You don't have to think about it, do you? And he said, I sleep with the score of the Eroica symphony under my pillow, or in some kind of accent like that. The point being that a piece like the Eroica symphony always has so many things to be found in it, to discover in it, that you think... I mean, Beethoven is one of the greatest composers from that point of view. You say, oh, I know this piece, and I know... And then you start to look at it and again think, my God, this is... And it's very often so revolutionary what he did. And it still is, you know, it still takes your breath away listening to these pieces that you may have heard many, many times before. But also, you know, there are lesser-known Beethoven pieces that, you know, like I'm doing the King Stephen Overture, which is almost never done, and it's what I call Beethoven's syncopated overture, and if you want to see what I'm talking about, come to the concert. But, you know, so we're trying to incorporate within the framework of the great pieces that are very well known, some of the lesser works as well.
So, Matthew, what are you looking forward to? I won't say most, because I'm sure that's not fair, but what are you really looking forward to next season?
There are a couple of programs in particular that I think are going to be real standouts. One of them is Gustavo Jimeno coming with Yuja Wang to do not one, but two Brahms piano concertos back-to-back. So one night she'll do Brahms' first piano concerto, and the next evening she will do the second, which is a pretty heroic feat for anyone to undertake, and I think that it's going to be remarkable to see those two artists on stage together at the same time. I'm also going to be really thrilled to be in the audience for Leonard Slatkin being here doing a Gershwin program, also a contemporary work, and Jackie Parker, the wonderful Canadian pianist, is going to be here doing the Barber First Piano Concerto. So I think both of those for me are real standouts. And I'm going to give you three because I just there's so much. Sir Andrew doing the Mozart Requiem, I think is going to be a pretty special thing, particularly since we're going to have the Equilibrium singers as part of Barbara Hannigan's partnership. So there's going to be a lot to enjoy.
I was very intrigued when I read the press release about this coming season that, you know, there's always a lot of talk of innovation in classical music and, you know, how to move it more in today's world or how to, not to make it more relevant because it is relevant, but how to reveal its relevance. But I was so interested how front and center are standard works in this particular program. Can you talk about what that means or what the vision is behind that for the TSO?
Sure. One of the reasons that we have such a rich series of options of familiar works is because at the same time, we're retooling some of the ways in which our subscription packages are put together so that we actually are offering more concerts per package, and we're offering them at a steeper discount so that if you are a subscriber to the Toronto Symphony Orchestra, you are going to get the best bargain you have probably gotten in quite some time. And that's frankly a very strategic decision so that we can continue to build out our audience. We've had some incredibly loyal followers over the years, and we want to continue that trajectory. So there's that sort of market-driven instinct, but more than that, and I think maybe even less cynically than that, the programs like Shostakovich 10 or also Sprach or the Mozart Requiem or Mahler 5, these are works that are familiar and part of the canon for really legitimate reasons, sort of what Sir Andrew was speaking to. There are always moments of new discovery. And if you think about it, if we have 2,300 people that are coming to a performance each night, hundreds of them have never heard these works before. And part of what we are as a public trust for Toronto is not just doing contemporary music all the time. We have to find a way to make sure that we are providing opportunities for new audiences to hear some of the old music that has made symphony orchestras what they are today.
Now, for instance, we have two Tchaikovsky symphonies. We have the Pathetic, which, of course, is one of the great and most extraordinary sort of painfully autobiographical symphonies anyone ever wrote. But we also have the First Symphony, which is very seldom performed. So, you know, of course we have a lot of the popular symphonies because Beethoven, we actually have the Sixth and the Seventh and the Eighth Symphonies. And then, of course, you know, later in the calendar year, we'll have some of the others. But my point is, I find it interesting. For instance, Gustavo Gimeno, in his first concert, is ending his program with the Daphnis and Chloe Second Suite, which is one of the great sensual and viscerally exciting pieces ever. But he's preceding it in the second half with the Tempest Fantasy over by Tchaikovsky, which is, I mean, again, Tchaikovsky. But how many people know the Tempest? It's actually a fantastic piece. I did it in the Proms about 3 years ago. But so, you know, we know Tchaikovsky, but we don't know this. So it's finding those pieces by well-known composers that we don't know so much. I think I've always liked doing that.
I wanted to talk about the incoming music director, Gustavo Gimeno. First of all, what is it that made him the one?
There was no silver bullet. The totality of his talent really stood out. And what was wonderful is that there was an incredibly collaborative and consensus-building process that we had in place from board members, staff, and musicians who made up the majority of the people that were on the search committee. We really wanted someone for the Toronto Symphony Orchestra that would be able to build on the work of Sir Andrew Davis and Peter Ungen, and who had beyond just incredibly compelling instincts and artistry on the podium, someone that would have a deep understanding of what the organization's commitment to the city needed to be and would be going forward, someone who had a real interest in education and in outreach so that there's a direct linkage between the great art that happens on stage at places like Roy Thompson Hall, but also the amazing art that happens when you're just, you know, 3 feet away from a violinist in a classroom or maybe at a bar playing a string quartet late at night or something. And he has that kind of sensibility and a deep curiosity and intelligence. And he loves people and he loves sharing music with people. So it was an easy choice.
Toronto audiences get a chance to see him in action in June, but then he's also coming again for two separate weeks in the forthcoming season. Is there going to be a push to get Torontonians to meet our new maestro?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, we had to, as soon as we made the announcement of Gustavo joining us back in September, instead of the two concerts that we had programmed for June, we had to make them three. So there's been great demand to come see him. And when he comes back next season, we will certainly be be celebrating, all of which will sort of make a nice crescendo towards the September 2020 when he's here as the music director officially.
Matthew, I am so interested in your vision for the TSO, and we see a bit of it in this program, but you know, coming into this organization, where do you see that it is, and where are you excited to take it?
I see nothing but opportunity with this organization. It's really quite unique and extraordinary in that case to have a collection of musicians who are so talented and so hungry to be the best ensemble possible, and to have been sort of cared and fed by such wonderful people on the podium for such a long time really does create a very a unique environment. And so I think from an artistic standpoint, we will continue to shoot for the highest ideals and achieve them night after night. I think from the standpoint of the work that we can do within the community, I think that we will double down on those efforts going forward. We have a deep history of success in school work and education work and bringing kids to come to performances at Roy Thomson Hall, partnerships leveraged across the GTA, and I think the more that we can do that in different neighborhoods, the more that we can actually find easy ways for people to understand that the music that we're trying to share with everyone really is a collaborative experience. It is a sharing, and we want to learn from the music of today and the people of today just as much as we want to be able to share what the world of Mozart might have been like through music with people who might not have that introduction. So, I think that we have an incredible group of patrons that love us deeply, and what we have seen with our sound check program, which is our, for 35 years old and under, you can get a pretty steeply discounted ticket to come to programs, and we see a deep diversity of audience members that come in through that program that I think really wonderfully represent what Toronto is in the 21st century. So I'm very excited.
Matthew, thank you so much for speaking with us.
It was a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much.
Sir Andrew, thank you so much for your time. It's wonderful to see you.
Well, it's always a pleasure to be talking about what you love.